Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest and greatest episode of Inside the Hexagon. I am your host, as always, Phil Anides, and alongside me is my co-host, Josh Molina. Josh, how you doing, man?
Doing great, Phil. Always a pleasure to sit down with you and talk Strikeforce.
Yeah, here we go. So we're going to talk about we're going to break down the top five female fighters in Strikeforce history. I'm looking forward to this, and this is good timing because we're coming off of in the sequence of our, you know, the chronological order of Strikeforce events. We just covered Misha Tate submitting Marlies Kunin to win the Strikeforce women's bantamweight belt. So we felt like it would be a good time to kind of break down these top female fighters, which we touched on in our last episode. So, yeah, so I'm looking forward to this. So what we'll do is we've got a couple honorable mentions, and then we'll start at it's really my top five with you, Josh, jumping in with yours. I know we have a little bit of a disagreement on the top three, so we'll get to that. But mentioning a couple honorables here. So I have Liz Carmouche on here, and this is really based off of her one fight against Marlies Kunin. She actually only went 2-2 in the promotion, but she was a short notice replacement for Misha Tate when Tate injured, I believe it was her knee, before she was supposed to take on Kunin for the bantamweight title. And so Carmouche stepped in on short notice and just put a whooping on the champion for about four rounds. If I remember correctly, I think Kunin might have won the first round maybe, but it was close. And then Carmouche just dominated her up until that fourth round, and then she got caught. She got overzealous. The champion made a really nice move and did this kind of backward flip and caught Carmouche and ended up submitting her. But it was a really good showing, and she was in position to win that. Even if she'd lost every second of the rest of the fight, I feel like she would have won 3-2. So I have her on there as honorable, not breaking the top five, but somebody who had a really good showing.
You know, these lists are tough because we can talk about their specific in-cage work, but we can also talk about the impact they may have had maybe in just a few matches. And I think Liz Carmouche fits this category. She's an honorable mention. She didn't have this great legacy, and she had her biggest moment in the UFC. But you're right. I mean, in this matchup, she did incredible. She got sort of, I don't know if we want to call it Chael Sonnen or Anderson Silva, yeah. But you know, it was just that Brazilian jiu-jitsu will get you if you just sleep for a second. And that's what happened. But, you know, she's a name that is very well known in women's MMA. And she's going to go down as somebody who was one of the top tier women's fighters. So I think she absolutely belongs here in this honorable mention slot.
Yeah. And then we'll mention the second one, Amanda Nunes. So she only went 1-1 in Strikeforce, but the one win she had was a 14 second knockout of Julia Budd. The other one she gassed out and ended up losing, but she's the GOAT of women's MMA. She's the greatest women's fighter of all time. And so the fact that she did have a short run in Strikeforce, she was actually up for more. She was going to do some more fights with the promotion, but she actually was kind of injury prone early on in her career. So she's on here not because she had a great Strikeforce run, but she's on here because she's the best women's fighter of all time. And she did have a cup of coffee in Strikeforce. So I feel like we got to mention her as well.
Yeah, I don't think we need to say too much about her. I'm not an Amanda Nunes, like, pound for pound greatest of all time cheerleader. She's obviously record wise you know, the best and has beaten everybody, but I think when you're talking about greatness, I think you're talking about something a little more than just your dominance in the cage. I think you're talking about your impact on the sport, you know, who was around you at the time. And so I don't really value her as the GOAT, although she's obviously the GOAT among most people if you just look at her record-wise. But again, an honorable mention because she's too big of a name to ignore.
Yeah, and, you know, I for me, greatest has to do with your in-cage or in-ring, you know, what you've done there. So to me, like, that's what that means. And so I get where you're coming from. But, I mean, God, she beat – I'm looking at her record right now. You know, obviously, she beat Misha Tate. She beat Ronda Rousey. And she beat Chris Cyborg, which is our – not in that order, but our top three for this list. She beat all three of them and beat all three of them decisively. So, you know, and then she also beat Holly Holm and – you know, Valentina Shevchenko, or Shevchenko, excuse me, who's, you know, small, but she just twice, and she just, yeah, she's amazing. So I definitely put her as the greatest, but I also see your point about, well, you know, impact and all of that stuff. So, all right, well, let's get to our top five. These first two we both agreed on, but Marluz Kunin comes in at number five. She went 3-2 in Strikeforce, so not, you know, not an incredible record, but one of those losses was when she stepped up to face Chris Cyborg at featherweight when Cyborg was having trouble finding opponents. And so that was up a weight class for her, but she hung tough into the third round. She was getting beat up pretty bad. So it wasn't like she had, oh, it was a really super competitive fight. It wasn't, but you got to hand it to her, her toughness. She did beat Sarah Kaufman via submission, very, very tough armbar to win the women's bantamweight belt. And it's interesting to note, though, she was really known more for her striking. She was Dutch, and she came from Golden Glory, which is more of a kickboxing team. So she was really, again, known more for being able to strike. All three of her Strikeforce wins came by submission. So she's definitely an important part of Strikeforce history. Again, she was, you know, women's bantamweight champion, and, you know, she put the belt on the line and you know, was able to defend it and all that. So I think she's an important part of Strikeforce history. I don't think her career quite measures up to the rest of our ladies on this list, but definitely a memorable fighter and somebody that I believe deserves inclusion on this list.
The thing about her, too, is that when you look at her, you don't think, holy cow, that's an MMA fighter.
Oh, no.
You know, so there's something that's really appealing about her in that she's really good. She's high level. She can strike. She's obviously this incredible Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner, but she also looks like she could be hanging out, you know, on the soccer field, you know, with her kids. There's something explosive about her that I think makes her really one of the greats, because she was very much underestimated, I think, until people figured out, holy cow, she can beat you. And so that's what I liked about her. She had this thin frame. She was kind of an underdog, yet she fought, you know, Cyborg hard, you know. And so I really like that about her. She's definitely fearless, and she didn't try to win technically. She went out there and tried to win matches, and she won a lot of them.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of had that girl next door quality to her in a lot of ways. You know, she wasn't like coming out and talking smack and all that. So, yeah, I agree. So, yeah, there we go. All right, next on the list is Sarah Kaufman. Kind of, in some ways, I wouldn't say she's the most controversial pick, but it's kind of interesting. She had, in some ways, if you take away, and we'll get to Cyborg, but her testing positive for steroids, if you take that away, I think Kaufman had the most controversial run. Nothing to do with her, but we'll get to that. So she was the first Strikeforce women's bantamweight champion. She went 4-0 in Strikeforce to open up her run there, which included winning the title and defending it via a very vicious slam knockout against Roxanne Modafferi. And then she kind of got screwed. So she was shown on camera during the Kunin Tate championship bout and was interviewed about facing the winner. I mean, it was, hey, you're being interviewed on camera about, you know, you're going to fight the winner. Like, it's pretty much a done deal. But instead, Ronda Rousey, who was starting to make some noise at that point, Ronda said, well, she wanted to fight Kaufman to be able to win the right to face Tate for the title. And Rousey had begun a feud, not just a rivalry, but a feud with Misha Tate. And so she said, I don't want to risk her losing to Kaufman, so I want to take on Kaufman. And if I'm Kaufman, I'm not agreeing to that. I say, hey, you told me on camera I'm getting a title shot, so let's do that. But instead, I don't know. I don't know what happened behind the scenes, but she ended up not getting that fight, and she ended up fighting Ronda Rousey and ended up getting submitted. And so that really ended her title hopes at that point. But still, you have to give it to her. I believe she was the most tenured women's fighter in Strikeforce history. She had 8 fights, went 6-2. So she was a big time. She was a big time part of Strikeforce for sure. And you and I, Josh, have talked about her on this podcast before. You actually have spoken with her and interviewed her before, and you said, you know, she wasn't a big time personality. Definitely did not appear to have that it factor, that charisma factor, and so maybe that's what, you know, kind of held her back. There was controversy around the fact that even though she was the women's bantamweight champion, that her fights were not being featured on, you know, tentpole Strikeforce events, that she was being more relegated to the challengers events. And so that's why her, you know, she wasn't seen as a big a deal as she should have been. And really, truthfully, That's really unfair to her in a lot of ways, but that was the situation that she was in. So she's somebody, and by the way, I asked her to come on the podcast and she declined. She's one of the only fighters, and I think she might be the only one that just straight up told me no. The others that haven't appeared have just ghosted me and not, you know, not responded, but she actually responded and said and declined. So kind of interesting that she, you know, maybe she doesn't remember her Strikeforce, her run in Strikeforce very well. You know, maybe that's not something that really brings up positive memories in her mind. But she was definitely a big part of the promotion. First women's bantamweight champion, somebody that put on some really entertaining fights and should be recognized as one of the greats within the promotion.
She really gets written out of the history book when people talk about great fighters in MMA. Part of it is her own doing. The other part of it is just that this is a sport that is built off of personalities as well. We see that, obviously. Conor McGregor, obviously, huge personality, highest paid. Everyone knows who he is. That matters. And with Sarah Kaufman, she's sort of, you know, there's a group of MMA fighters that are really good athletes and they're really good fighters. And the ones who are the good athletes and the ones who are the good fighters are in the top tier of this sport. And I would put Sarah Kaufman as a really good technical athlete. She trained well. She knew what to do fundamentally. And she won a lot of matches in women's MMA because she worked hard and she was technically sound. However, when she stepped up there against the top tier talent in the sport, she lost every time. And the reason for that was she didn't have that athlete, competitive, I'm going to step it up and figure out a way to win X factor. That's a John Jones level type thing. That's somebody who's a good athlete, but also I'm losing the fight. How do I come back and win? And we did see that a lot with John Jones, but we did see it a couple of times when he was down. And so, you know, Sarah Kaufman, she's super nice and she's going to go down as somebody who understands women's MMA as one of the pioneers, one of the early greats, but she just did not win the big one. And also, she also didn't have this charisma that would overcome that fact where people would still look at her and say, well, she was still great. I mean, look at all these fighters. You know, Chael Sonnen never won the UFC championship, but we all know who he is. Why? He's got a big mouth. So, you know, Sarah had a couple strikes working against her, but I think just objectively, like, you got to give her her due that she won a lot of fights and she had more fights in Strikeforce than any other woman.
Yeah. It's definitely one of the greats there. I should mention, searching back in my mind, she may have declined, or it's possible. I had started a newsletter very early on in the podcast, and I think she may have removed herself from my list, is indicating her lack of interest in the promotion. I may not, but in some way she rejected us one way or the other. So anyways, all right. So this brings us to our top three. And this is, again, where you and I somewhat disagree here. I'm going to basically start with my number three and then work our way up. And then once we get past our my number one, we can talk about why you have it in a different order. But so my number three would be Miesha Tate. So she beat Elena Maxwell in Strikeforce in 2008, came back the following year, lost the decision to Sarah Kaufman. But then she goes on a tear. She wins four straight in Strikeforce, which included her arm triangle choke win over Marlies Kunin that earned her the bantamweight title. It was the first time Kunin had been submitted in 26 pro fights. So that was a really big deal. And again, remember, at that point, Kunin had had three wins in Strikeforce, and all three of them were by submission. So big deal. After losing to Ronda Rousey, which we're going to talk about the Ronda Rousey fight when we get to Ronda, Tate would rebound with a submission win over Julie Kedzie before moving over to the UFC. So, you know, I got to say, so Tate, her title win over Kunin was not that impressive to me. Like, she definitely won the fight, and it wasn't like a Hail Mary situation like it was when Kunin was able to turn back Liz Carmouche. This was a fight where Tate was winning the majority of the fight and then, you know, was able to get the arm triangle submission and Kunin was forced to tap out. So it was a good win, but it was not a really entertaining bout. Tate didn't look just super dominant and just, oh man, she's just a killer and all of that. So it was not a situation where, oh, okay, a big, you know, a star is born and man, she's the next big thing necessarily. So I don't hold her as in high regard as I do Ronda Rousey and Chris Cyborg, which is why she's my number three. That all of that said, of course she beat the number four on our list, Marlys Kunin. I'm sorry, the number five on our list, Marlys Kunin. She did lose to Kaufman, but again, she was able to come back and win four straight. She was an important next step in the evolution of women's MMA, and not just from a talent perspective, but from a recognition perspective, that I think that she was a big part of that. And again, we're going to talk about her feud with Rousey, but that feud was extremely important to women's MMA. And so I put Tate up there, kind of what you were talking about earlier, Josh, that it's not just about what is accomplished in the cage, but also what you bring to the table outside of it. And Tate checks up both of those boxes.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. And of course, in 2021, reflections and memories of these fighters are blurred with what they did later. And so part of the lens I see Misha Tate in is the woman who beat Holly Holm after Holly Holm beat Ronda Rousey. And what an incredible win that was. That was in the UFC, of course. But I really like Misha Tate in terms of what she did early in the sport to help build up women's MMA. Everybody needs a strong opponent in order to make yourself seem that much better. And she was that for Ronda Rousey. And so I just like Misha Tate because I feel as though so many times she dug deep and pulled something out and came back and won. And even in the second Ronda match, which we'll talk about later in this series, she almost survived the first round. Like, she had so much heart. And if you recall, she was in that arm bar for a long time. I mean, That was sick.
Dislocated her elbow.
Yeah. And so that's will, that's drive. Most people tap. She eventually did. But she hated Ronda so much that she just like laid there. So yeah, we'll talk about the I just have a, they're all great, right? But yeah, I would rank her a little bit higher than this, but I think she's great. And the other thing is longevity. She's still fighting, right? She retired, she made a comeback. And again, I know we're talking about purely Strikeforce, but I think she's something special.
For sure. All right, well, that brings us to my number two, which would be Ronda Rousey. So she went undefeated in Strikeforce, 4-0 with four armbar finishes. I mean, just best, pretty awesome. Again, we mentioned Tate. She beat her to win the bantamweight title in 2012, then defended it decisively against Sarah Kaufman later that year. The win over Tate, as we mentioned, that was a big deal. It was the first real women's feud. I mean, you had a rivalry between Chris Cyborg and Gina Carano. But that was it. I mean, they had a lot of respect for each other, and that was very evident after the fight. You know, with as you just mentioned, Tate hated Rousey, and Rousey wanted Tate so badly. There was talk in the media, back and forth between the two. I mean, it really built up the fight. It was a Frank Shamrock, Phil Baroni level of smack talk and hatred and all of that. And it was a really big moment, not just for Strikeforce, but for women's MMA overall. And, we talk about Chris Cyborg, we talk about Gina Carano, but the woman that opened the door for Dana White to consider bringing women's MMA into the UFC fold was Ronda Rousey. He said, if I were going to do women's MMA, Ronda Rousey would be the one that would open that door. She's the one that I would sign to do that. It wasn't Chris Cyborg, who he had called Vanderlei in a dress. And, Gina was pretty, even though it looked like she was coming back, she ended up never coming back. So Rousey is in a lot of ways the most important women's fighter in history, period, just because she opened that door. And she was so dominant, like nasty dominant in Strikeforce. She never lost the bantamweight belt. She became the first woman to sign with the UFC. And she was christened the UFC's first women's bantamweight champion. But even in her time in Strikeforce, again, you talk about impact outside of the cage, she actually appeared on Conan, which was a big deal. I mean, it was a big deal for a Strikeforce fighter to appear on a national show, period. But for a women's fighter to appear on Conan, like that's a big deal. And she, Showtime was building her up and doing specials around her and all that stuff. I mean, this was the star. And part of this is Cyborg not being able to find really good competition. But there were so few high quality female 145ers at that point. So it kind of hurt Chris. Like, she had to sit on the sidelines a lot because of that. And then again, for other reasons, the steroid test, which we'll get to in a minute. But really, you could make a really strong case for Rousey being number one, which I know she's your number one, Josh. And I don't have a ton of defense against that, but except where I'm going to talk more about that when we get to Chris Cyborg. But yeah, the Rousey Tate feud, you know, the mainstream appearances, the domination, all four finishes. As we mentioned, she dislocated Tate's elbow in that bout, and which actually in a lot of ways says more about Tate's toughness than it does, you know, Rousey being so great. But she was amazing. She was a revelation, and the fact that Strikeforce gave her that platform and then she elevated the platform further, you could make a really strong case for being number one, and I won't necessarily, you know, want to fight you over it because of her accomplishments. But pretty amazing, and definitely top two, and if not, you know, number one.
Yeah, and I think you said it all. I could spend all day about Ronda Rousey. I have really super mixed feelings, but why don't you talk about your number one, and then we can sort of talk about the differences between the two, or do you want me to go off on Ronda Rousey?
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'll synopsize Chris Cyborg, and then you can talk about Rousey and why you have her number one over Cyborg. And honestly, as I'm talking about Rousey, I'm kind of becoming more convinced that she should be number one. But let's talk about Cyborg, and then we'll go and I'll tell you why I have her number one. So she went 4-0-1. And Strikeforce, she technically won all five, or technically she's 4-0-1, but she won all five fights. She was the first women's featherweight champion, defended her title three times, which was the most for any female in Strikeforce. She headlined the very first major MMA card evented by females, as we've talked about. That was her 2009 fight with Gina Carano. But then on September of 2011, it was announced that she would return to the promotion to face Hiroki Yamanaka. And that fight took place at Melendez versus Masvidal on December 17th of 2011. She won via TKO in just 16 seconds of the first round. However, in January, the result was overturned when Cyborg it was real that she had tested positive for stanozolol, an anabolic steroid, and as a result, fight was changed to a no contest. Her fight license was suspended for a year. She was fined $2,500, and she was also stripped of the Strikeforce women's featherweight title. So this is why I have her number one. The reason is because of her impact and the trailblazing that she did. So, again, defended her title three times, first women's featherweight champion, and that fight with Gina Carano, that opened the door for the Ronda Rouseys and the Misha Tates. Like, if that fight doesn't happen and doesn't perform as well as it did both inside and outside of the cage, then I don't think you have the opportunity for Ronda Rousey to be able to, you know, test her wares on the platform that she did. So Cyborg really, in a lot of ways, opened the door, and because Carano left, and because Carano, you know, lost that fight decisively, Cyborg was really it. What tarnishes her legacy, of course, is the steroid test. I mean, that's really what hurt her. I mean, she would take on her first fight, she was 6 pounds overweight, and then she went out and just like ragdolled and destroyed, you know, this Japanese fighter. And then, you know, she wins in 16 seconds and tests positive in her last Strikeforce. So it just, she really, you know, because of the stench of steroid use, that's really what tarnishes her legacy. The fact that we never got to see Cyborg and Rousey, they were talking about that fight after Rousey won the belt. They were talking about that fight, but Rousey insisted that Cyborg come down to 135, and Cyborg said she couldn't make it, and they talked about a catch weight at 140, and Rousey refused to do that. And so I remember all that, and that never, you know, never ended up happening. But I put Cyborg here because I feel like she opened the door and just made it all possible. Rousey took that and elevated it to another level, and so you can make a case that she's as important. But without Cyborg, I don't think we have Rousey at that level either. So that's my number one. But honestly, as the more we talk about this, the more I'm being convinced that I think Rousey might be number one. But Josh, let's hear your take on it as we wrap things up.
You know, I might have some implicit biases here. I just, you know, don't like Cyborg because, I mean, she failed a drug test, and it probably was not the only time that she was using
steroids. Yeah, that's part of it, by the way. It's like when you get caught, that's probably not the first time you did that.
Yeah, and you know, she was naturally bigger than these women that she was fighting. Well, she had
was she naturally bigger?
Well, you know,
bigger.
she was bigger. You know, maybe she used steroids to be, you know, even bigger. But she just sort of felt out of place. She always felt like it was a mismatch when she would take on these fighters who were so much smaller. And I just feel as though that tarnishes her. For me, John Jones is tarnished. You know, I think Daniel Cormier, everything he did with his body, you know, you think about that athletically, what he was able to do, and he's never failed a test. And then you look at John Jones and all that controversy. It's the same thing for me with Cyborg. I just don't know how many of those fights that she was clean for. Obviously, she tested positive one time. So she's obviously great. She was the Amanda Nunes before Amanda Nunes. She would just go out there and knock people out. And I have no doubt that if Cyborg and Rousey fought, that Cyborg would have knocked Rousey out long before Rousey ever won the UFC title. You know, whenever they would have fought. Because Cyborg was just too strong, too big, too powerful. But I also wonder whether that was a fair fight or not. So that hangs out, that cloud sort of hangs out there for me. And I just sort of feel that Ronda Rousey, it's hard now because she's such a sourpuss. I mean, she loses twice and she goes away and, you know, we never hear from her again. And she's kind of just not out there anymore in terms of MMA. But if we could go back to that early days of Strikeforce when Ronda was just sort of like tapping, when she was like 4-0 and tapping out these fighters so quickly, it was just so impressive. And who was this person? And it wasn't a knockout. We've always seen knockouts in boxing and MMA. But here is this woman who was, I mean, they would just get close and she would get them to the ground and tap them out in seconds. And so I think that was something new. That was something fresh. And Ronda's not a huge, she's not big. She's not super like muscular. She's a good athlete. But when you looked at her fight, when you looked at her walk in, she looked like she belonged at 135 pounds. And so I just think that there's that, of course. Her attitude, the fact that she had like a pro wrestling persona heel, made such a difference. It made everybody pay attention. And then you had Misha Tate, who's over there just like the perfect foe for her. And so I, you know, I rank Ronda at the top just because she was so important, so easy for me to say, right? I'll let you say it. But she's just so important to the Strikeforce history, and she changed Dana White's mind. You know, all of a sudden, Dana White, he literally did a pro wrestling thing. He took her, well, they bought Strikeforce, and he put her, and he made her champion. He made her the UFC champion without ever beating anybody in the UFC, right? And then she goes in there, and then, you know, she beats Liz Carmouche. So I think she's great, and I like Misha Tate just for all the reasons that I said about her and the fact that Misha, as far as I know, has never failed a drug test. And those two are like the Brett Shawn of Strikeforce. They just brought the best out of each other, and wow, like we're going to be talking about those two fights eventually, and they're amazing. So, yeah. So I mean, no disrespect to Cyborg, but I just feel like, you know, we'll never know to the extent that she was under the influence of anabolic steroids. And then when she fought Amanda Nunes, my goodness, she fought somebody her size, and look what happened. So.
Got destroyed. Yeah. So I think I'll amend, and I think I'll put Rousey number one. I do think I will still keep Cyborg number two just because of her trailblazing and dominance, and you know the fact that Rousey beat Tate decisively. I think I'd still keep her number three. But yeah, I think you've convinced me on Ronda, and I'm sure that she is, you know, with her new child and just listening to this and just super excited that we elevated her to number one. I'm sure that just makes her day and makes her year and all of that. But
well, I think Ronda Rousey is going to send me a Christmas card and Chris Cyborg will send you one. So
there you go.
I'll take that any day of the week.
Phil. There you go. All right. So our final list, I think we'll go with Ronda Rousey number one, Chris Cyborg number two, Misha Tate number three, Sarah Kaufman number four, and Marlo's Kunin number five, but all very important females in the history of both Strikeforce and women's MMA overall. And I enjoyed I enjoyed chatting through this with you, Josh. This has been pretty cool, and I'm sure we'll do more of this in the future. But I appreciate your time, Josh. We're going to go ahead and ride off into the sunset. Hope that you stay safe and you stay healthy. We will see you soon.
Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcasts.